This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today, the health of girls from the first grade through the 10th grade. Listeners, I welcome your questions for Sharon Roan. An award-winning journalist, she's the personal health writer for the Los Angeles Times. The mother of two girls, Sharon Roan is the author of Our Daughter's Health. The book is a guide for parents of girls ages 6 to 16. Our Daughter's Health contains information about fitness and sports, nutrition, eating disorders, sexuality, mental health, personal safety, and substance abuse. In the preface to her book, Roan writes, "In the last 20 years, we have learned a great deal about how women become sick and how they stay well. But it's time for a second phase of progress. It's time we turn our attention to our girls." She goes on to note that research has shown that many of the major diseases of adulthood have their roots in childhood and adolescence. Listeners, you can join us with your questions and comments about the health of girls 6 to 16 with a telephone call. Here are the numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Our Daughter's Health is published in a paperback edition from Hyperion. Sharon Roan, good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you, Celeste.
How are you?
Very good.
Good. You note in the book that a couple of years back, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists reported that a generation of girls is at increased risk for depression, infertility, cancer, and osteoporosis. What is the status of the health of these young girls' mothers, aunts, and teachers?
Well, I think that we have to look at the fact that our girls, particularly in adolescence, are not often as healthy as they appear to be. Certainly teenage girls are beautiful. They look very healthy on the surface many times. But health isn't just the absence of disease. Health is about a healthy lifestyle and doing the sorts of things that will preserve and protect the body's functions for years to come. And when you really look at teenage girls in particular, you see there are many, many risks for serious health problems in girls, many behavior and lifestyle factors that are contributing to unhealthy habits. And we also see actually the presence of some serious health problems in girls, such as eating disorders and girls smoking and girls who are becoming overweight. So it's an age group that we don't typically think about as being unhealthy. But when you look at all the other subpopulations of people, teenage girls have a profile that is really at quite at high risk for the development of health problems.
Mm. And what about us, the older generation? How good are we doing at paying attention and being role models for these girls?
Well, we're certainly doing better. And one of the things I like to point out with this book is that the women's health movement has been so important. And there are mothers out there who are trying their best to exercise and improve their diets and adopt good mental health habits and see the doctor, get their mammograms and all those things that have really come into our consciousness just in the past decade or two. And that's wonderful. Certainly, I think mothers today have the potential to be better role models for their daughters than perhaps previous generations of women that weren't so proactive about their health. But the point I try to make in my book is that it's sort of ironic that while adult women are really doing things to make themselves healthier and are really demanding more attention and better health care from the health professions, we're really overlooking our daughters and the period of life when many health problems start. If you look at a lot of the problems that we women have with our health, the problems that develop in adulthood, you can look back oftentimes and see that the roots of those problems are in childhood and adolescence. That's when the poor eating habits began. Many women who smoke started as teenagers. Depression often starts in adolescence. It's often not recognized and diagnosed, but the first bout is typically in adolescence. So there are so many things that really begin much earlier in life. And I think if we really want to improve women's health and take it to that next level, we've got to say, how can we prevent these problems in the first place? Right now, as adult women, we're doing good at addressing some problems, but we need to start thinking in terms of prevention with our youngest generation of girls.
Yeah. You quote a doctor in the book who says, osteoporosis is a pediatric disease with geriatric consequences.
Yes, isn't that remarkable? And that really goes to the point that so much of our health as adult women depends on those early years. We don't know everything yet about osteoporosis, and certainly genetics and family history plays a large role, but it is fairly clear now that adolescent girls and even younger girls don't usually get their RDA of calcium. About two-thirds of girls are not getting the recommended daily allowance for calcium. And we know that bone is built up and through the adolescent years and reaches its peak mass in the early 20s. After that, it's too late to add bone. Now, we can do things to help protect our bones, but we can't add bone mass anymore. So it's important during those years to make sure that we're doing everything we can to help girls build healthy bones. And that's a new concept, and it's really quite startling. And I also should point out, Celeste, it sort of points out the difficulty of this whole effort, because girls don't understand why they should be doing something now that may affect them when they're 80. In fact, they don't even believe they're ever going to be 80. You know, they don't think that far ahead. And so it's really up to parents and health professionals to say, we're going to look out for our girls' best interests and do whatever we can to make sure that their needs are being met.
Yeah. Not only is calcium key to preventing osteoporosis, but also vitamin D and exercise. Now, if a girl is more interested in reading or watching television than she is in breaking a sweat, that's an issue. Also an issue is, you know, if she doesn't care for milk, perhaps doesn't tolerate milk.
Right.
What can you do in that situation? That's kind of two questions, but
right. Well, both good questions, Celeste. If your girl doesn't like milk, and I have one such daughter, it is harder. I think parents have to start with the idea that it's going to be a priority whether your daughter likes it or not. And what I tell my daughter is, okay, you don't like milk, fine, but you have to have calcium and adequate calcium intake each day. So we need to talk about what are the foods that contain calcium do you like, and I will buy them for you, and we'll make sure that you get those. So we strike a compromise, but I don't back down and say, okay, well, all right, she's going to fight me on this, I'm going to give up. I think parents have to hold the line and say, this is too important, and we're not just going to, let some initial barriers throw us off. So, you know, some suggestions, if your daughter doesn't like milk, is chocolate milk, she might appeal to her. My daughter likes chocolate milk. I get that. That's fine for her. Another excellent choice is calcium-fortified orange juice. If your daughter likes orange juice, that's a terrific source. You can also buy vitamins, multivitamins, including vitamins that are geared to children, that add a little extra calcium, not a great deal, about 250 milligrams, but that's helpful. And then you can start looking at all the cheese products. And, you know, you can, if all people think cheese might be too fatty, but there are a lot of non-fat and low-fat cheeses that you can work into her diet and try to, you know, raise her calcium intake that way. The other thing that parents can do is try not to have foods around that will take away the calcium that you're trying to get in her. For example, consuming a lot of soda, which our kids do today. They drink so much soda pop and colas, that is really decreases the amount of calcium that is absorbed by the body. So you might be putting enough calcium in, but if you're drinking a lot of soda, it's not all getting into your system. So you need to kind of be aware of maybe some things that might undermine your efforts. Mm. And then the other part of your question was about exercise. And, you know, that gets to so many issues that are important to our girls' health. And a lot of girls do stop exercising, especially around the kind of middle school age, preteen, teenage years. And some don't like athletics to begin with. And in my book, I try to point out a lot of the medical literature that shows how very important it is to exercise nowadays. And I think we can say, without a doubt, that everybody needs to exercise now. We're a sedentary society. And it doesn't matter your gender, your age, your level of ability. We all have to exercise. We have to find a way to work it into our lifestyles if we're not naturally active or have some sort of job or activity where we're getting exercise. So that goes for our children. And a lot of children don't get adequate exercise in school anymore. Physical education classes have been cut back in many cases. So we can't depend on schools to do that. So I try to tell parents that they need to say to their daughters, it's not acceptable to be sitting around all the time. And you need to pick out some activity and then support whatever they choose. It may not be competitive sports. That's not for everybody. But it can be something as simple as walking the dog 3 times a week for 20 minutes and working up a sweat, walking briskly. Or you can have your daughter, you put on her headphones and her favorite music and use mom's exercise bike. But we really have to say it's not okay to sit around, even for girls who don't have weight problems. Because we know, I think all adult women, we all know that a day will come when they will have to start exercising. And it's so much harder to begin in adulthood if you haven't done it as a child.
Yeah. In addition to increasing bone density, the benefits of exercise, you point out, are great, including lowering blood pressure in adolescents with high blood pressure, increasing good cholesterol, a positive effect on mood, and lowers stress and anxiety. Now, if I'd known that when I was a teenager, I probably would have exercised more.
Yeah.
And then may favorably alter the production of the hormones estrogen and progesterone during menstrual cycles in ways that contribute to a decreased risk of various types of cancer.
That's right. And, you know, we've learned all this from women's health studies over the past 2 decades. And they all apply to our girls. I have several chapters in the book that relate to activity and the importance of sports and exercise. And I'm a big believer in it. I think there's just so much that points to the value of being active. And and if you do have a daughter who is even slightly interested in sports, by all means, give that a try, especially when they're young. Our young girls you can kind of talk them into giving about anything a try. When they're older, they're much more reticent, I think, to try new things. Mm. But when they're young, get them in t-ball and go try different sports. Try ice skating, try basketball, you know, soccer. There are so many things now open to girls that we didn't have when we were young in many cases. The revolution in women's sports has been such a positive thing for the health of girls and women. So I encourage parents to give that a try. Girls who participate in sports, as opposed to just other kinds of physical activities, tend to gain other benefits as well as the health benefits that you named, Celeste. And those things are a good self-image about their bodies. Girls who are in sports tend to admire muscle. And they're not trying to emulate this unhealthy image of a very thin woman that we see a lot of times in our society and advertisements and things. Girls in sports tend to reject that a little more. They tend to learn a lot of important things about leadership and about discipline and just feeling good in their own skin. And so I think that sports confers many benefits. Studies show girls in sports are less likely to become pregnant as teenagers, less likely to abuse alcohol and drugs, less likely to smoke. And they also tend to learn more about nutrition because they realize eventually that good nutrition will affect their performance. So there are many, many advantages to that.
Yeah. There are a couple interesting charts in the book, one of which is about weight and eating healthy. 85% of girls ages 12 to 17 were concerned about weight, but just over 10% of girls and boys in that age group were concerned about eating healthy food.
Right. Yeah, we have this big discrepancy where kids aren't linking their physical appearance to what's on the table at home or what they're getting, you know, to eat at school or getting out of vending machines. And I think that's where parents really need to have an ongoing dialogue with kids about the importance of healthy nutrition. And again, my book goes from ages 6 to 16, and that's because if your daughter is young, it's easier to start when they're, say, 6 through 11. During those years, kids are very receptive to messages about good nutrition. They'll really listen to what you're saying and pay attention when you're talking about the importance of fruits and vegetables. And so I think that's really good to point out. And parents also need to have the conversation about what does a healthy body look like for a woman? And this is something that you have to continually talk to your daughters about. And you can use television and magazines as a tool. When you see women on TV, you might say, you know, do you think that she's an average-looking woman? Or you can point out advertisements that say, do you notice how the smoking ads all have very thin women? Do you think all women are naturally that thin? And draw your daughter out about it and point out the various body types of women in your family and how, you know, that tends to run in your family and that all types of body sizes are acceptable. So I think that, you know, there's a lot we need to do with helping girls recognize that there isn't one ideal body type. I think most health experts today recommend sort of a simple formula. They say eat a good diet, a good balanced diet, exercise, and then accept whatever body type you have. If you're eating right and exercising, then you're doing the things you need to be doing, and you may not have, you know, the body of a model, and that's fine. You we're not all supposed to have that type of body. Very few people do. So we need to, embrace this diversity of body types. The other nice thing is there are some magazines out now for girls and teenagers that are dedicated to pointing out various sizes of girls. They show models of all kinds of girls who are heavier and thinner, and that's important to kind of point those out to girls.
Yeah. I know growing up when I was a girl, the newsstands were not as full of magazines aimed at adolescent girls and pre-adolescent girls, but they were all very similar, and everybody was the same shape, color, height, everything.
Right. And it's a very new phenomenon that we're seeing publishers say there is a market here for parents who are looking to give their daughters a different point of view. And there are some wonderful magazines out there that focus on that. And also there's some great websites. I have a lot of resources in the book about tools parents can use that will reinforce these kinds of messages.
Can you give us a couple of titles of periodicals that are out there that girls would find interesting and that their parents would approve of, and maybe a website or two?
Yes, of course. I think that a terrific magazine for younger girls is American Girl. The American Girl books, too. There are several books aimed at girls' health, especially in the preteen years where you can really start and should start talking to a girl about her body and how to take care of it. And they're outstanding resources. And the publisher is the Pleasant Company, and it's American Girl Magazine, and the American Girl book titles. And they're fabulous. Another good resource is New Moon. It's a magazine for girls that offers a very fresh perspective on girls' health. And there's also a newsletter for parents who are trying to, help their girls embrace a healthy body image. You could also look at a couple of good websites. One is www.aboutfaith, and that's about-faith.org, and it's devoted to media literacy and helping parents and their daughters challenge what they're seeing on television and in movies that really offers perhaps a body image or a depiction of health that it isn't really what we want our daughters to have. So that's another good source. AmazingGirls.com is another good website that is will give girls a lot of activities and information, again, to help them reinforce these concepts of health. And another, final one is Girl Zone. I love that one, GIRLZONE, girlzone.com. Steer your daughter to those places, and they will, they're beautiful websites, very engaging. Girls will find them interesting and attractive, and then as a sort of a secondary thing, we'll pick up these great health messages.
You note in the book that girls as young as 9 or 10 are worried about body image. And in fact, you tell the story of a girl who started becoming bulimic in the second grade.
Right.
What do we know about girls and when their sense of body image begins to develop?
Well, several studies have come out on that in the past few years. And I think most parents will be very surprised to learn that girls as young as 9 and 10 are thinking about their bodies and looking at other girls their age, comparing themselves, seeing what's on television and comparing themselves to that. So they may not vocalize this, and they may not even be doing anything about it. They may not be saying, oh, I'm fat, I need to diet, or doing anything that's overt, but they are thinking about it. And that's why parents need to know that, so that they can start talking to girls and try to draw them out about what they're thinking and talk to them about what kind of messages you would like them to have, which is, of course, not embracing dieting. Dieting is not effective or healthy, and we shouldn't be, dieting among girls is only to be done under the guidance of a medical professional in cases of extreme weight problems. But for the most part, our girls should not be thinking about dieting. They should be thinking about proactive things like how to eat healthy. So parents need to be aware that you have to start young and talk to girls. And you can even ask questions like, do any of the girls in your class, Susie, talk about their weight or complain about their weight or talk about dieting, and see what she says and see what her thinking is on this topic. I also urge mothers to remember that they are the role models for their daughters. If mom is dieting and talking about dieting and saying, oh, I'm so upset, my pants don't fit that I just bought 6 months ago, or, oh, I feel so fat today, you can be sure your daughter is picking up on that. And so you need to keep your own thoughts and your own actions on your own weight issues to yourself if you want your daughter to adopt a healthier way of thinking about weight.
Back to the idea of this sense of body image developing in very young girls, 9, 10 years old, maybe even earlier, and they're not saying anything about it. How do you draw them out, or do you need to? How do you pick up on unhealthy habits that are, as you put it in the book, accruing quietly?
Right. Well, I think the best thing to do is for parents to try to start the conversation. And a good way is to, you know, ask her what her friends are doing. If, you know, it might feel a little too threatening, maybe, especially if you think your daughter does have an issue with her body type or dieting or food. Or you might just start out by saying, you know, what do girls talk about at school, or what do you know about nutrition? You can also purchase a book. There are several good books on girls' health that talk about healthy eating, and sit down at bedtime and read a few pages together. And, that may be a non-threatening way to see what your daughter is thinking about. Certainly you should talk to your pediatrician if you have any concerns about whether your daughter may be, you know, having a problem with eating. Maybe she's a picky eater, or she doesn't, she seems worried about what she eats. You know, that's a time to draw in your doctor and make sure that your doctor can also talk to your daughter about it. I mean, a good pediatrician is usually going to talk to kids about the importance of things like limiting sugary snacks, and my daughter's pediatrician always tells them fruits and vegetables are God's gift to us. That's always what he says to them, which I think is a beautiful message, and he just drops it into the conversation when they get their well checks. So you can also, you know, rely on the health professionals to help you along with this.
Yeah. What do you think about having children actively participate in marketing for groceries and putting food, you know, putting a meal on the table?
Right. Well, you know, I'm really opposed to that.
Really?
Yeah. I think that we have to separate kids from advertising. That's a big problem. So, you know, kids, there's sort of a vicious cycle going on, Celeste, in that a lot of kids now are watching a lot of television, and it's a double whammy to their health, because they're watching television instead of being outside doing something, riding their bike or scooter or kicking the soccer ball around or something. So, and then the other thing is they're picking up on commercials that are advertising all kinds of foods meant to appeal to kids, usually snack foods, or beverages, or high sugar cereal foods. And, you know, my own daughter, although I try to limit the amount of television she watches, will come to me and say, can we try this or that new thing that she's seen on television? And parents get bombarded with that from their kids. So I really think that parents need to, limiting TV is an excellent way to start, because you really do avoid a couple problems there if you try to reduce the amount of time they're watching television. But you also need to help them become savvy media consumers and tell them, you know, they're trying to get you to buy this stuff, but it's not healthy. And talk to them about why that is, and maybe come up with an alternative, something else that they would like that you think would be healthier for them. But I think that we have to try to protect kids from this bombardment of media advertising, and also the kind of advertising that leads girls to think that their bodies should be perfect, and then leads them to be unhappy when they think they don't have the right body.
Hmm. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Our guest this afternoon is Sharon Roan. She is the personal health writer for the Los Angeles Times. She's the mother of two girls and the author of Our Daughter's Health. That's our topic this afternoon, the health of growing girls. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I welcome your questions and comments this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. We've had so much information over the last several years about the dangers of smoking, yet we seem to still have a problem convincing our kids not to smoke. I know that they're getting messages from the tobacco industry, of course, that are different from those that we'd like to give them. But what is it? Do you have any insights as to what it is that remains attractive about smoking to kids?
Well, a lot of it is advertising. A lot of smoking advertisements are geared to women, and when you look really closely at the advertisements, they are young women. You have to remember that our preteens and teens don't look at other teens as their role models. They look at the next age level up. So they're looking at young women and saying, you know, what do I want to emulate? And then they see these tobacco ads with very young women. They look like they're in their early 20s maybe, and smoking. And so I think that is a very serious part of it. The other problem is that so many women have been smoking, and girls will imitate their own relatives. If mom or grandma or a favorite aunt is a smoker, that's problematic. Because we now know, of course, many adult women are trying to quit, but if they're still struggling with it, that's still going to have, girls will see that, and it could sort of paves the way for girls to think of it as more acceptable. Studies show that when there's a smoker, an adult smoker in the house, that greatly increases the chance that kids will smoke, and that kids who start smoking will be unable to stop if they want to. Now, another factor that plays into this is girls quickly learn, especially teenage girls, they quickly learn that smoking and weight are linked, and they find that smoking will maybe help them keep the pounds off. And that is true, and it is true that if they stop, they may be more likely to gain weight, and that's really very, very difficult to overcome that. The best thing, of course, is to convince girls never to start, because once they do, it's tied up to this being thin idea. So that's a real problem and a reason why many teenage girls continue to smoke.
Yeah.
So we need to really try to help girls think about, even if they would gain weight, there are so many, many consequences to smoking that when you weigh it against maybe weighing a little more, the choice is clear that you shouldn't smoke.
Yeah. Here again, media literacy pays off. I mean, if you think of the ad campaigns we've seen for Virginia Slims over the years. Let's talk with a listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. My daughter graduated high school 2 years ago, and when she started high school several years ago, she was very upset to find that some of her friends started smoking. And you know, they wouldn't stop. And finally she said, "Aren't you concerned that you're going to get lung cancer?" And they said, "Oh, you know, it relieves stress. And when we're not stressed out in a couple of years, we'll just use the nicotine patch and we'll be able to quit. So it's okay." And she told me this, and my jaw dropped. And I've never heard anybody, you know, talk about this, but apparently this is a very common way of thinking for high school girls. Well, you know, it helps us with the stress now, and in a couple of years we'll just use the patch. No problem.
Well, that's a very interesting observation, and it really raises a couple of important points. And one is, when we talk about the health problems that face our girls, stress is one of them. Kids today are under a lot of stress. Certainly, kids who are trying to do well in school, maybe manage a part-time job, and do a lot of other things, are under stress, and families are oftentimes under a lot of stress. So we need to help our girls. We need to acknowledge that stress is part of life and help our girls learn healthy techniques to manage stress. And that, again, is something that should start very early in life. teaching girls breathing techniques or taking your daughter to a yoga class and start learning about how to deal with stress, because we all face it. And certainly that's very true of our girls and our teenagers. And then the other important point that you make is that kids think they can just stop. And just in the past few years, research has begun to look at smoking cessation among teenagers. And it's really startling what people are finding. They're finding that kids who start smoking very often want to quit after a short time, but many of them become quickly addicted. In fact, teenagers may become addicted more quickly than an adult who takes up smoking. And then it's very hard for them to quit. Our smoking cessation programs and products are not necessarily geared to young people. There aren't many studies looking at how do you help a teenager stop smoking. And really, a lot of them who are smoking, they want to quit. So I think that there's a real area here that the medical profession needs to address and is trying to address in terms of smoking cessation for young people.
I want to thank the caller for her call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL, anywhere else toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. A young woman in our community has created a mentor program for girls. It's called Girl Zone, and girls get to try out all different kinds of things and get hooked up with women in the community as mentors. The woman who founded this group, Girl Zone, feels that girls continue to get the message that it's okay to be passive, and they also seem consistently to undervalue what they're capable of doing.
Right.
This is a big part of the self-esteem problem in young girls. Maybe you could talk with us about the link between self-esteem and being able to respond to peer pressure.
Yes, that's so important. We really have to help our daughters believe in themselves and find out how capable they are and that they are in charge of their lives and have the ability and potential to steer their lives in the direction that they want to go, even despite some barriers such as, you know, families where they the economic situation is a struggle. We still need to point out to our girls that there are things that they can do. And I try to urge parents to help their daughters find something that they love to do and that they do well, they're good at. Maybe they can say, you know, I'm a poet, or I'm a good ice skater, or I'm a great babysitter. You know, I made, you know, several hundred dollars last year babysitting. Something that is special and unique about them. And, you know, and that may take some time. That may take trying different things and looking hard and asking teachers, where do you think her natural interests and abilities lie? And just do different things to try to bring that out and help your daughter find something about herself that is really special. And then the other thing that I write, I devote a chapter in my book to education, and you might think, well, what does this have to do with health? But it has a lot to do with it. We really need to make sure that our girls are pursuing their education and meeting the goals that they are capable of. It's still true that boys will dominate in certain classes and in certain areas. Now, more girls are taking science and math and computer nowadays, but it's still less than boys, and boys still tend to raise their hands more in class. So parents need to be very proactive about talking to teachers and saying, you know, are you calling on the girls equally? You need to talk to girls about, you know, you need to speak up. This is an area isn't owned by the boys. You have every right to be an engineer if that's what you want to be. Again, there are some wonderful books out about women in these kinds of careers that can help your daughter have role models and see that it can be done. And then, you know, the other thing parents should consider, as this isn't an option for all parents, but all girls' education sometimes is a good solution, in that girls tend to they tend to take more math and science and computer in all-girls schools and then become, you know, much more participatory in class because they're with their girls, their peers. So that's another option. But these are things that girls need to think about that will help them get a sense of what their future is. I think that the important question that girls need to ask is, who am I? You know, you don't necessarily need to say what you're going to be when you grow up because that's not clear a lot of times, but girls need to keep asking themselves, who am I? And have an answer to that they can be proud of and feel good about.
Hmm. Before we go, I want to talk with you about the very important issue of violence. This is something that we see in schools from bullies in the early grades,
right,
throughout school,
yes,
and then later we see situations where girls find themselves in dating situations that become violent.
Yeah.
How do we talk to our girls about these situations?
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that because that's another area that I think parents may not really understand what their girls, the kind of environment their girls face. Studies now show that among women who are in abusive relationships, they oftentimes say, you know, it first started when I was a teenager. It was either with the same partner that has been abusive, and they stayed with that partner, or they've been in a series of abusive relationships that began in adolescence. And I think that is a dramatic new insight that we need to pay attention to. When we talk to our daughters when they start dating, it's not enough just to talk about sex, although that's very important to talk to your daughters about how to handle sex and pressures to have sex and that whole arena. You also need to talk to your daughters about how should you expect to be treated on a date? What is appropriate behavior? And I think parents need to make sure that girls understand that it is not acceptable to be called names, slurs, or to be abused verbally or physically or emotionally. It's not okay for a boyfriend to be jealous and to try to tell a girl what she shouldn't do or what she should or shouldn't wear. And some boys will try to do this. So parents have to have a conversation with their daughters to make sure that the dating relationship is a healthy one and that you need to keep an eye on the relationship and make sure there aren't any signs that there is any manipulation or any type of control issues going on. Because once a girl enters an abusive mm-hmm. relationship, it is actually very, very hard to extract a teenage mm-hmm. girl from that relationship.
I knew somebody that had to leave the state and go live with relatives.
Oh, dear.
Because she got into that. Well, it wasn't she got into that situation, but that was the situation she found herself in.
Right, right. And girls, and I think you're right in saying that girls find themselves in these situations. Girls, these are girls just beginning to date. They don't know what to expect. This is all new to them. And parents have to make sure they're talking to girls about what is appropriate behavior.
Yeah, and I think also we just saw the results of a study on bullying, and it's really shocking. And I think that that's another issue that parents really have to collectively raise their voices at schools.
Yeah,
about.
You know, I talk in the book about how kids rate violence at schools as a significant threat to their health. And if you ask parents the same question, they rate it much lower. So our kids actually have a much better sense that community violence is a threat to them than adults do. And I think we do need to talk to our kids about the importance of not only their own behavior and being a respectful person and a person who honors everyone's dignity, but a person who will come forward when they hear of anything that might be a threat to someone else's health, or will step forward when someone is being abused in any way, whether that's physically or emotionally, verbally.
Yeah, very interesting. We're out of time. Thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
It's been my pleasure, Celeste.
Sharon Roan has been our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Look for her book, Our Daughter's Health, Practical and Invaluable Advice for Raising Confident Girls Ages 6 to 16. It's available in paperback from Hyperion.